Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporta. This is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks. It must have been a full moon. It was the weirdest show ever. On Sunday, March 20th, 2016, everything went wrong. I apologize. In fact, I said, let's not put this out. But they insisted. This is episode 1272. Enjoy if you can. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free trial, visit texture.com/techguy. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/techguy to apply for a loan now. And by the Ring video doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Right now, get free expedited FedEx shipping when you go to ring.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. My goodness. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, the toy store. It's the toy store show. Yes, you can relax. I'm not going to talk politics. It's just going to be the toy store. We can all agree or disagree, but what we're talking about doesn't matter. Or does it? Or does it? Maybe it does. I don't know. Tuesday, the FBI, Department of Justice, will face off against Apple computers in court, in federal court, over the encryption deal. And the feds now have said, we want to call witnesses. We don't want to just argue our case by ourselves. We want witnesses. Now, I'm no legal beagle, but apparently that means they feel their case is weak. That's what people are saying. And so they want a lifeline. I want a lifeline, Your Honor. Judge Sherry Pym will be listening to arguments. Apple's going to bring in their head of encryption. Ooh, not sure who the FBI will bring in. The argument, of course, seems to be about the iPhone, the 5C owned by the San Bernardino bad guy, the shooter, killed 14 people. He and his wife destroyed the two phones they used, but they neglected to destroy the phone that he used for work, his work at the San Bernardino County Department of Health. So this is a kind of interesting case because the government owns the phone. And County San Bernardino says, have at it. And darn it, they can't unlock it. Well, they're worried if they start guessing PIN codes that the phone will erase itself. So they're asking Apple, hey, here's what we want you to do. We want you to backpatch the phone, write some special software. Apple calls it the government OS. It's kind of mean. I want you to replace iOS with government OS, and that'll let us... we don't want you to break the encryption. We understand that, you know, that would leave a bad taste in your mouth. So here's what we want you to do. We just want you to write some new firmware that will let us guess very rapidly PIN codes until we get through all 10,000 and unlock the phone. And thank you very much, Apple. Apple says, to do that, I can almost see them like Nathan Hale standing on the steps of the courthouse. Give me liberty or give me death. To do that would risk the safety of the entire populace, nay, of the world. I was listening to a wonderful speech by Bruce Sterling. He's a science fiction author, but also one of our greatest thinkers. He for the last 30 years, has given the commencement speech at South by Southwest in Austin. On Tuesday, he gave his speech. And he says, it's all a sideshow. because the truth is we live in a surveillance economy. Apple's surveilling us, and the feds are surveilling us. He says normally, you know, the feds, somebody works as a Fed for a while and then gets a job in private industry, and there's a kind of nice flow back and forth and a collegial atmosphere. And there has been, frankly, between tech companies and law enforcement. But they're fighting over this one. And they're bringing every resource to bear. But it's really just a sideshow. He quotes another science fiction author, Neal Stephenson, and says, people who rely on crypto are like the guy who lives in his house and thinks himself completely safe because he has a picket fence with one picket 1 mile high. Yes, that's insurmountable, but there's all these ways around, and that's law enforcement knows that. There's always the human factor. So in a way, when the Department of Justice says, well, this is all about marketing for Apple, they're right. And in a way, when Apple says, but we don't want to give the government the keys to the kingdom, they're right. But it's all just a sideshow. And let's not forget that should they want to, all parties involved have plenty of access to everything we do at all times. Not to mention your internet service provider. And let's not forget Google and Amazon. I have an Amazon Echo sitting right here, right next to me. This thing has a wonderful, brilliant engineering. They call them array mics. They can pick up a pin dropping in the corner of the room. They can hear everything that's going on. Now, Amazon, of course, isn't listening at all times. You can. It's easy to verify that by just firing up a program called Wireshark and looking at the traffic coming out of the Echo. Nevertheless, they are an American company, and I presume that should they be presented with something called a national security letter, approved by a secret court called the FISA court, that, you know, I could probably flip a switch that just turns that microphone on, sends whatever is going on in this room out to federal law enforcement. In fact, if such a thing were to happen, they wouldn't even be allowed, according to the rules of the national security letter, to tell us. It would be secret. And, oh, by the way, your TV can do that, too, and, of course, your phone can do that. Your computer can, too. Look around you. You're surrounded by microphones and cameras. And you bought them. You put them in your house. You welcomed them. And get ready, because you want to install more, don't we? The Internet of Things, we call it. Let's put all these devices that are connected to the public internet in our house. Oh, but Apple, could you make sure that we're safe doing it? Yeah, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. And even if Apple did, they're collecting information about you. Amazon's collecting information about you. Google's collecting information about you. You're giving everything you ever cared about, you're giving to Facebook. And by the way, Facebook is extra governmental. It's international. They have 1.5 billion users. It's not just the U.S. It's a tiny fraction. Mr. Sterling calls them the five horsemen of the internet. Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, Google, and Facebook. They represent, you know, the modern big five. It's not the big industrial giants, the automakers anymore. It's the big digital giants. And they know everything. Maybe that's better because they're using that to sell advertising, not to march in and arrest us. On the other hand, I think there's a very thin membrane between the stuff they gather and law enforcement, isn't there? So they're really only arguing over a little tiny little bit of what is actually a massive surveillance state that's created and supported by private industry, private enterprise. So you know, maybe that's something more important overall than what happens on Tuesday. And by the way, hey, pay no attention to that, because Monday, Apple's going to announce some shiny, exciting new toys. The toy store is open. New phone, new tablet, new iPad. We're going to get a 10-inch iPad Pro that'll have a pencil. It'll have a pencil. Yeah. And so don't pay no attention to what happens on Tuesday. Monday. Monday's the... I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bring you down. 8888-ASK-LEO. Sometimes, you know, you get in one of those moods. I'm in a cynical mood today, but I'll snap out of it. Let's talk about toys. 8888-ASK-LEO, the The website is techguylabs.com. The conversation continues there. We put everything that I talk about there. Now, James DeRuvo's taking the day off for work. He'll be back this evening putting that stuff up. By tomorrow, of course, everything that goes on the show, including all the audio and video, will be available on the website. And questions and answers, and I hope some comments, too. So if you hear something, if you disagree with me or you have an opinion, I know you do because I'm getting a lot of email about this subject, you can also put it in the comments section for all to see. And you know what? That's free. There's no sign up. And I personally am not surveilling your use of Tech Guy Labs. Others might be. Can't promise your internet service provider is not watching. TechGuyLabs.com. That's the website. Free to use. No sign up. Tech Guy Labs. Use a VPN and Tor, and no one will even know who it is. All right. Back to the phones we go. I'm sorry. I'm cynical. 8888-ASK-LEO. Hello. How are you, Kim Schaffer?
Good. How are you?
Very good. You're getting over your cold?
Finally.
I don't know how I managed to get through without getting sick.
Since
everybody
in
the office is sick. I must have an impermeable barrier.
You're lucky, because this was awful.
Carly's out today.
Yep. We just pass it around to each other.
You millennial. Are you all making out in the back or something? What's going on? Am I being left out?
Did you know that geeks do that?
Yeah, I'm getting left out of something. Something's going on.
We are all making out with each other.
It's like, what? Everybody's sick again?
Yeah. Well, because we pass it all around.
You're all in the bullpen, and Lisa and I are in our sealed environment.
Exactly.
It's not fair.
It's not fair. And so we pass it all around, and then we think we're over it, and then it just comes right back to us.
That's not... You're supposed to develop immunities.
Yeah, my immunity is not... been non-existent.
And I take a lot of vitamin D. Take vitamin D. You're getting out in the sun, probably. Maybe not, though. You know, nowadays, I think people don't, even young people who could generate vitamin D if they would but go outside, don't go outside because everybody knows the sun's going to give you cancer. So they need to take vitamin D. Take vitamin D. That keeps you from getting sick. And then I take it, I think it's probably bogus, but I take a immune improving stew of some sort of mushroom thing.
Oh.
It's a pill.
A kombucha thing?
No, it's a pill. I saw the kombucha store went out of business. Who would have thought?
There was a kombucha store?
The Main Street kombucha store, kombucha store would have gone out of business.
Oh, I didn't know there was a whole store.
They went out of business. There was a restaurant. You can get fermented anything back there. It was just right, it was over here on the boulevard. Yeah, they got paper in the windows now. It's jungle love. That's why you're all sick, you millennials, you. Did you read the article in the New York Times? Now, you're not a millennial, so
I think I missed that.
I think you just missed a couple of years. We do have a few millennial working here, right?
I think so, yes.
New York Times article says, millennials are terrible workers because it's that entitlement thing that started when they were kids and everybody got a trophy for participation.
Mm-hmm.
And now
stars.
They get into the workplace. My kids are millennials. I have a 21-year-old and a 24-year-old. That's called kids. People think that because somebody's 25 that they're not a kid.
They're still kids.
They're still kids. So there's shock and horror. I guess there's a news site called Mike, M-I-C, that is run by people in their 20s and is staffed by people in their 20s. And, shocking horror. They're irresponsible and they have,
work ethic.
They'll sit next to each other and tweet at each other, even though they could just say hello. And there's no work ethics. The big story was the guy who went to the boss said, I have to go home. There's someone I have to go to a funeral, take a week off. And the boss said, I'm so sorry. Okay, go take a week off. And then the next day, the guy posts on Medium, which is, like public. Yeah, I had to take. I told my boss I was going to a funeral. I'm building a treehouse because I'm just burned out. It's so much work.
What a dummy!
What a dummy! He didn't even get fired. The boss said that's a one strike because the boss is 28. That's a strike against you. I don't know.
Unbelievable.
Millennials, you can't live with them, but you can't live without them. Anyway, I like millennials. My kids are, but they're kids. Well, kids do something like that. Then you say, okay, good. You're fired. Goodbye.
Right. But
good luck with the next job and don't do that again, I think, because you'll probably get fired again. And, at least don't post it publicly. But that is one thing about 20-somethings. And this gets to the privacy argument. And I do. I live in public, right? There's no secrets about my life, but I chose that because I'm a so-called public figure.
Right.
I'm not Hulk Hogan public.
Hey, for $115 million.
Wow. Well, I don't think that's... Okay, so this is an interesting story. I'd love to know what you all think about this one. Hulk Hogan, you know, the wrestler. There's a website, Gawker, which I have no love for. They've outed me on a couple occasions, frankly. But I'm a public figure. I didn't go to court and sue them. They published a sex tape of Hulk Hogan, and he sued him. And the jury in Florida, which is where Hulk lives, decided that he should get paid $115 million for that. Now, of course, the Gawker magazine, which can't afford that, is going to appeal.
Oh, of course.
There's a little financial issue, though. You have to post a bond for $115 million. They don't have the money. So I think they're asking investors to give them some money so that they can appeal this. I don't know how that'll work out. But on appeal, it will get overturned because there's this thing called the First Amendment. And as reprehensible and as horrible as it is, and as a victim of Gawker, I know how it feels. We do. If you're a public figure, you kind of lose the right to privacy in this country, and the First Amendment protects you, protects a journalistic outfit. I don't know. What do you think about that one? That's an interesting one. We seem to have. The problem is those rules. It kind of implied some sort of common sense and civility, and no one ever imagined, certainly not the founding fathers, that it would come down to publishing sex tapes. And that would have to be protected. But they did write the Bill of Rights is pretty clear about this. And it's an we live in an interesting world where on the internet anything goes. Should that still be protected by the First Amendment? I think you can't, like, it's hard to slice and dice because, you know, then you get this judgment call about what's okay, and then suddenly you are regulating speech. It's very difficult. 8888. There's no Leo sex tape, but if there were, I promise you, no one would want to publish it. No, you're safe on that account. I think if they did that, Gawker would get sued by the people who saw it. But that's another matter entirely. Gawker is not a nice. They've gotten out of the gossip business. They realize this is just not a good thing. Anyway, I come to you, Kim Schaffer. Not to talk about things like this, never mind. I come to you to talk about our callers and who should be first on this fabulous show, even though at this point they're probably thinking, let me hang up.
Dale, speaking of Florida, in Florida.
You ever get in a mood? I think I'm in a mood.
I'm always in mood.
You're in a mood? Okay. We're all in a mood. We're all in a mood here. Let's hope Dale is in a good mood. Hi, Dale. Leo Laporte. The tech guy. Thanks, Kim.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Am I okay?
Yeah, you're on. And you're all okay. Right. And we don't have a tape or anything.
Well, anyway, I live probably 50 miles from Hulk Hogan. And there's more to this than just happened. There's going to be another the jury is going to make another award.
Ooh.
This coming week. So that
could easily put Gawker out of business. They don't have the money. They've said that.
I understand that.
And anyway, I wouldn't mind. To be honest, I can't think of a better outlet to be put out of business. There's no love lost between me and Gawker. I completely hate them. And Nick Denton is reprehensible slime bag. However, I have even more respect for the First Amendment. So this is a tough one.
I do too. But anyway, I could talk about a couple topics. I got something I need to resolve quickly, I hope. I live in a two-story house. Fortunately, most of my electronic toys, they're on one floor above another. And I have a Windows desktop, a Mac desktop. I have a smartphone, and I just bought a smart TV. What is the difference between a modem and a router? And what's the best thing to buy?
Oh, these are great questions. It's funny because networking really used to be the province of the high IT priest in the business who would wire all of this, and everybody would just say, don't mess with that, and be nice to Gary because he's the only one who knows how it works. And Gary would be walking around, you know, king of the world because he's the only one who knows how it works. Then all of a sudden, we all got internet and multiple computers. And suddenly we got to know about routers and networking. And it, you know, as hard as the companies have tried to make this easy, it's still a little weird and complicated. So here's I'll give you the quickie, the little understanding of this. And I think it's not that complicated. So you've got an internet connection to the outside world. Think of it as a pipe. And it might be a cable.
Sometimes.
Might be a cable company. Say again?
Well, sometimes.
Sometimes.
I just downloaded Windows 10, and it keeps turning this thing on and off. Oh, I have never been without I have never been without an internet connection when I had Windows 7. Oh, now it happens every other day.
All right. Well, I'm going to take a break because this is going to take a little more time, I think. And then we'll get down to go. Don't get me started on Windows 10.
All right.
Don't get me started on that one. Let's take a break. We'll come back and stay on the line, okay? We'll answer, and I'll give you a little quick mini tutorial on networking when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I can go on another rant, another tirade about Microsoft. But there is, this is kind of all of a piece, isn't it, in some ways, that these companies are increasingly disdainful. Used to be, even Amazon was famous for this, a customer-centric business. That's the way to run it, right? Serve the customers, be customer-centric. That used to really be the orthodoxy and of the new age, right? The internet-enabled consumer is supreme. And the only way to succeed in the internet economy is to be honest and forthright and serve the customer. Because they'll know otherwise because they're talking to each other all of a sudden. You know, when we were all in little silos, you know, Procter & Gamble could say, well, Tide is better. And no one would know because you couldn't talk to anybody else. But now we all talk to each other. Oy, that's the worst thing for a company. We go, you know, actually, the Windows 10 isn't so great or whatever. And now the company's got to deal with that. And they don't, by the way, have any idea how to deal with it. So somehow that orthodoxy was all started by, you know, Doc Searls and the Clue Train Manifesto now 12 years ago, which is that, you know, we are the internet and you have to serve your customers. It's shifted. And I think Apple started this. Because Apple did so well by saying, no, we know better than you. And we know what the right way to do this is. And just, we're going to take it from here. And the iPhone is an example of that. The massive success of the iPhone, where it's Apple's way or the highway. You can't install, you know, on a computer, you can install software. From anybody, anywhere. You can get in a Ziploc bag on the back alley and install it. Period. Apple, starting with the iPhone, I think really is this where it all began, said, no, you cannot get software for anyone but us. We will vet it, and we will only sell you stuff we think is okay. And by the way, if there's adult content, we won't sell it to you because we don't think you should see that stuff. And it was so successful that it made Apple the most valuable company in the world. And every company now is saying, oh. And so the worst example of this just happened, which is Microsoft saying, you should have Windows 10. And we don't care if you don't want it. You're going to have it because it's good for you. And you're just seeing this in many areas now where companies are just saying, no, we know what's best. And it all started with the iPhone. I really believe that. Yes, I agree with you. Isn't this Twisted Mister? This is the S7. Great phone. And it is why I kind of now prefer Android, is because at least Android gives you the chance to customize. For instance, there's a big, you know, everybody's all upset in the Android world because a number of phones, including the new G5 from LG, don't have the app drawer anymore. They're going the iPhone route where, you know, there's no app drawer on the iPhone. On the iPhone, all the apps are on the screen. You can't get rid of them. You can uninstall anything but Apple's apps, and those you have to put in a little folder and hide it somewhere, right? But on Android, traditionally, you've been able to just on the screen have the apps you want and the rest are in the app drawer. But lately, phones have gotten rid of the app drawer, and people are freaking out. But see, the thing about Android is you don't like that. Just use a different launcher. But there's dozens of launchers, and many of them, if not all of them, have app drawers. So I'm using, this is Nova Launcher, and you just can customize it. Not on an iPhone. No app drawer is on an iPhone. Never will be either. Unless Apple decides it's the right thing to do. Dale's on the line from Florida. He's got a complex network, the kind that would have made Gary the IT guy in years gone by tear his hair out. But you don't have a Gary anymore. You're Gary. You're the IT guy. And it's your job to figure out how to make all this stuff work. So you start off by asking about some terms. Let me just define those terms and we can get to your specific issue. So you have a pipe into your house that's the internet. And, you know, by the way, that pipe may be of varying reliability and speed. Lately, in the last few years, they've gotten pretty fast and pretty good and pretty reliable. It used to be the internet would go down a lot. I think for most purposes, we can just assume that that pipe is working. You know, if whether it's DSL, through your phone company or cable data through a cable company, that pipe's working. Satellite, maybe a little less reliable, but let's assume the pipe is working. Now, it comes in your house. You can't just, you know, it's not pouring water out of a faucet. It's pouring data in a particular format in your house. You need a modem to take that data and translate it from radio frequency over copper into bits on Ethernet, and now you can use it in your house. So Ethernet is the networking technology we all use to transport bits around the house when we're doing it via wire. So you have a modem that takes the cable or the DSL and turns it into Ethernet. Now, that Ethernet, you could plug directly into a computer. In fact, when we first got internet connections, that's kind of how you did it. You connect your computer to the internet. It was on the public internet through a modem. And the use of modem is a little confusing because in the old days, a modem was an analog to digital device that converted sound coming over your phone line into bits. But it was modulating and then demodulating, modulating to send out, demodulating to receive. Now it's not quite the same thing, but it's roughly analogous. It's taking the bits in one form coming through the pipe and turning them into a form you can use. Do you want to put it through the air? Do you want to have it on wireless? Then you need let me step back one. So if you're connecting one computer, no problem. You want to do two computers, you got a problem because you only have one internet address from your internet service provider. And the rule on the internet is every computer has to have a unique address. So for now, you need something called a router, which is kind of like, it does routing. It's kind of like the guy in the train yard who says, you go there, you go there, you go there. Make sure the trains don't collide. The router connects to the modem. A lot of times the router is in the modem. In fact, most of the time it's in the modem. And it will say, okay, your one public address is 179.63.24.12, but I am now going to assign local in kind of non-public addresses to every device on your network, your phones, your TVs, your Internet of Things, your Amazon Echo or your microwave oven, and of course all your computers as well. Each have to have a unique address. There are two different ranges those addresses can exist in. Most of the time it's 192.168.something.something. Sometimes it's 10.0.something.something. But both of those ranges are reserved for non-routable local traffic. So you'll have 192.168.1.100, and your neighbor could have that same number, but since it's not visible on the internet, it doesn't matter. The router is doing something called NAT, Network Address Translation, and it is making sure that data that comes in through the one address goes to the right other address via a network address translation. It gives each computer a unique IP address in the 192 range or the 10-dot range. And it does that with DHCP or Dynamic Host Configuration or Control. I can't remember protocol. Okay, those are all the acronyms and the words. When you connect to the router, and if it's a wireless router, it's doing the same thing, but it's putting it through the air instead of over a cable. When you connect to the router then connects to the internet, and it figures out, like the guy in the train yard, which traffic goes to which computer. That was exhausting. So there, that's how networking works, roughly. There's also things called switches. I don't want to get too complicated. They're involved. They might be there to spread it out even more. So Windows 10, now your sounds like your problem is really separate from all of that, but you did ask that question, so I wanted to explain all of that. Does that all make sense, Dale?
Yes, it did. With one more caveat, what do you recommend as a good grade router? I have a two-wire that the phone company provided me.
Right. Yeah, we had. Yeah, so this is not uncommon that the internet service provider will give you a router, usually not such a great router, because you know they rent them out, and you're paying monthly for it probably, maybe not, but if with the cable company you might be. So it's not a bad idea to get your own better router than the one that the company provides. If they'll let you, they have to let you. So you can ask them, do you allow me to buy my own router? And which brands do you recommend? You do need to talk to them about that. Make sure that's okay because it varies.
All right. Okay.
However, you almost always can get a better router than the one that came from the internet service provider. It's just you may not have the option. If you do, then you buy a router, and I'll give you some names, and you turn off NAT on the cable modem, or you disable the you want to disable the routing. You only want to have one router on a network. You don't want to double NAT. So you turn off the routing on the cable modem or the DSL modem, and you use your fancy, shiny new router to do all of that. I use an ASUS AC3200. That's a wireless and wired router. It does both. It's very good. Lots of good software in it. Very configurable. They keep it up to date. But there are many companies that do this. Now, are you having trouble with Wi-Fi getting through the floor?
Yes.
Okay. So that's another problem that has now become universal because everybody has wireless, which means, you know, there's your neighbors. You probably can see many wireless access points on your computer. When you choose your access point, you don't just see yours. You see your neighbors, you know, all over the place. In most cases, you'll see maybe 5, 6, 7, sometimes dozens of other routers. That means it's a very congested airspace. There are really only three major bands that a wireless router can use, and you don't want to be on a band with strong signals from other routers. That can cause all sorts of problems. Not only interference, but sometimes a computer or TV will choose the neighbor's router instead of yours. That's definitely not what you want. So for that reason, it's a good idea to have, there are a couple of ways you can get. Normally, devices will choose the strongest router. So it's a good idea. You want a strong signal. By the way, the stronger the signal, the faster the speed as well. So if you're going wireless, you want to definitely extend your wireless. There's a way to do it called WDS, Wireless Distribution System. And basically, it's by setting up repeaters. So you'll have your ASUS or whatever you buy down there by the cable modem, or in your case, the DSL modem, and then kind of midway between it and where you want to be, you'll put a repeater that is called a wireless extender. And really, it's just another wireless access point that just doesn't do any network address translation. It just passes it along. It amplifies the signal. The best way to do that is by buying one of the same brand as the router. So when you're buying a router, you might buy a couple of extra extenders. They're usually less expensive. And by doing so, you can extend it out. There's another way to do it, which I've chosen to do. And it depends on your layout. If you're really spread out, sometimes it's not practicable to have multiple extenders. And so you're going to want to use another form of networking. I use power line networking. Now we have to take another break. Hang on, Dale. This is going to be the network hour. But this is so common, I think we probably should address it. We'll come back with more in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Our show today brought to you by Texture. I'm a fan of this. This is a great idea. You like Netflix, right? You subscribe, low rate, get all the movies you can eat. Wouldn't you like to do that with magazines, too? Texture, it's Netflix kind of for magazines. All the biggest magazines, all the magazines you want to read on your tablet or on your phone, every page that's in the newsstand issue, plus back issues, so you never miss a great article, a great idea, a great image. If you're a photographer, I love the National Geographic. Used to subscribe. My grandma used to give me that. Had piles of them in the basement. This is the National Geographic without all the clutter. You save a tree and get it this way. And by the way, they look great on your iPad or your tablet. The images are beautiful. All the best magazines are there, whether it's Bon Appetit or Time or Esquire, Sports Illustrated. Are you into cars? Oh, yeah. They got Automobile, Hot Rod, Road and Track, Car and Driver, Motor Trend, Truck Trend, Cycle World. See, the thing is almost every month there's an article I want to read in four or five magazines, but I don't want to buy four or five magazines, or worse, subscribe. See, I don't want to subscribe to Rolling Stone, but there's always something in there I want to read every month practically. I love the recipes in Bon Appetit, Better Homes and Gardens, or Gluten-Free Living. There's a lot of good cooking magazines. It's all here. You could start a free trial right now at texture.com/techguy. This is such a great way to get those magazines at a much reduced cost. If you were buying four or five a month, this will save you money. And it'll save you a lot of clutter. No more coffee table clutter. All Shutterbug, Popular Photography. If you like Stereo, Sound and Vision, CNET PC Magazine, Macworld, PC World, Wired. There's always an article or two I want to read in Wired. And I used to have a subscription, but I always felt guilty because I have a big pile of magazines and it was like, I got to get to this. No, not anymore. I feel that way about The New Yorker, too. Texture makes it easy to find articles you care about, too, because their editorial team does deep dives into interviews and stories on subjects that appeal to you. You can star your favorite magazines. That adds them to your library. You can read them offline, of course. Anytime, anywhere. The Texture app on your tablet or your smartphone. Take a look at the catalog and get it free right now at texture.com/techguy. texture.com/techguy. And we thank them for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. If you had the choice and you were building a house, I think you're right. I think putting Cat 6 or Cat 5e, it's expensive, but putting Cat 5e in every room would be a great way to do this. Powerline networking is a nice kind of compromise if you're not building the house. What you do is you plug a base unit in next to your router, plug a wire into that, and then you're using the wiring of the house as kind of Ethernet wiring. It's not perfect because you're sharing it with the power grid, and so you don't get all the bandwidth you'd like. But it's in the early days, it was terrible. It's gotten pretty good. So the power line networking will allow you to effectively have a wired network in the house. Then you'll put a receiver anywhere you want internet. And there's two ways you can do it. That receiver can be wired. So you could put, plug in where you plug in your TV, plug in a power line receiver and plug your TV into that. Or, and this is what we do, you can have they have power line wireless access points. So I plug it in next to the router and then over, 200 feet away, I plug in a base unit that has Wi-Fi. So I now have a new Wi-Fi access point. The bandwidth is constrained. It's down maybe to 20 megabits from 150 megabits. So there's some attenuation from the grid. But 20 megabits is still good. It's enough to, do most of what you want to do. So that's another way to go. I've tried to use extenders, and I tell you, we have problems with extenders because there's congestion. And so an extender, if it's congested, for instance, the Sonos is on 2.4 gigahertz, and that just kills bandwidth. Sonos network is really awful it just kills the bandwidth. So I can't use 2.4, I can use 5, but 5 gigahertz, the problem with that is it doesn't go very far. So I've tried repeaters. This is challenging. All of a sudden, you see, this is why Gary got the big bucks for so long. This is a hard thing to do. Well, I mean, if you're really going to future, if you're building and you're really going to future proof, put in conduit, and one of the things in the conduit right now, it would be Cat 5e, say, which is probably for a long time going to be fast enough, but maybe not forever. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. Well, I'm sorry for this primer on networking. There's some great online tutorials. Practicallynetwork.com is excellent. Lots of places you can go to learn about this, probably and learn better and more clearly. But I'll just wrap this up here, which is the hardest thing, and then we're seeing it more and more, is getting Wi-Fi everywhere in the house because there's congestion, there's noise. The Wi-Fi frequency is an unregulated frequency. The FCC, whether it was wisely or just by accident, actually, it wasn't the FCC. It was worldwide, left the 2.4 gigahertz band and later the 5 gigahertz band without regulation, which means your baby monitor uses it, your cell phone uses it, your wireless cordless phone uses it. Everything uses it. Your microwave oven is at 2.4 gigahertz. And all of that's making enough noise that it's making Wi-Fi problematic, not to mention the fact that Wi-Fi, because it is, that's a microwave frequency, 2.4 gigahertz. The higher the frequency, the less able to go through things it is. So walls, and 5 gigahertz even worse, right? Walls, it bounces right off. Metal, it bounces right off. So Wi-Fi works best with line of sight. But, of course, no one has line of sight. That's, you don't build a house so that you can see everything in the house. That would be dumb. So you've got to go through walls, and you just have to kind of arrange things and move things around until it can get through the walls. If there's metal in your walls, it's far worse. Sometimes going through floors is bad for that reason. And there's no one answer. That's the problem. And I've seen companies. There's a new company in San Francisco just started up called Eero, and you might see reviews of their units, E-E-R-O. They're supposed to solve this Wi-Fi conundrum with something they call mesh networking. So they have a unit and then another unit. So I tried to set up an Eero in my house. My house is a tough environment. And I'll tell you how I solved it in my house. But it's a tough environment. I've never been able to get Wi-Fi extenders to wirelessly wire my whole house. Just can't. And the spousal acceptance factor is very problematic because when my wife says, I'm not getting internet, I have to jump. She did something very mean last year. She said, well, if you can't do this, I guess we can call in an IT specialist. I almost couldn't breathe when she said that. But you're married to the tech guy. Please don't do that. It'd be humiliating. So now the burden is to create a good network. This Eero thing seemed like a good idea until I tried to set it up in this challenging home. And so you get a base station and two other units. It's expensive, $600. That's a lot, 200 per unit. And then the idea is you set up the Eero where your router is, and then you set up a second unit using, you know, the phone. You set up a second unit to talk to the first unit and kind of and bathe your home in Wi-Fi. Yeah, well, I tried that, except the problem was that the second unit, everywhere I put it, said, no, I can't, it's too far away. So I get closer and closer. Finally, the only way these work is if all three units are in the same room. Well, that doesn't help anything. Send it back. $600, I'm not going to spend, and don't recommend you spend. Now, I have friends it's worked for, so maybe it does work. I ended up using Powerline. So Powerline, the idea is you buy a unit that's plugged into the router via wire, and then it uses your electrical lines to spread the internet. Problem is, it's sharing that electrical line with electricity. So it doesn't give you all the bandwidth you would like. It's not as good as putting Ethernet cable in the walls. But it's decent. In my case, it's good enough that I was able to. And then I put a wireless. Then the power line could either be directly connected to your TV or other computers via wire, or you can have it be a wireless access point. So in the most distant regions of the house, I plug in a base unit. It's getting its internet connectivity through the house, through the wiring. And then the base units are wireless access points. And that seems to have worked pretty well. Not perfect. I still get the occasional, you know, we could bring in an IT guy. But so far, so good. I'm really, yeah. Married to the tech guy. That's nice. It would be a private humiliation, but humiliating nonetheless. Well, now I've shared it. We could get Russell to do this. He's really good with this stuff. I actually talked to Russell, our IT guy, and I asked him, you know, there's a kind of prosumer solution called Ubiquiti that supposedly solves all this with the mesh network. It's what we use here. This studio is hugely challenging, 10,000 square feet, and, of course, very noisy, and lots of VLANs and all sorts of complicated stuff, and we use Ubiquiti. But he says, There are some negatives to that, too. For instance, you have to have a computer running its server all the time. Well, that's not good for a home. It's got to be running all the time. I think the newer versions have kind of solved or tried to solve that. There's no good way to do this. We're getting better, but it's still, remember, the domain of the high priesthood of networking, and And I'm afraid that it's still a little voodoo involved in this as well. But a combination of extenders, Wi-Fi extenders in some cases, using WDS, by the same brand as the base unit, that always works better. And perhaps, if that's not working, take a look at power line networking. And you might, you know, and really it's just it's trial and error. It's experimentation. All right, I'm moving on. No more. That's it. We've done the network thing. Let's talk to, I guess, our next caller, our second caller, Mike in Louisville, Kentucky. He wants to run Windows on his Mac, and it won't take. It's going to be that kind of show, isn't it? Can't we get, let's just, Kim, one caller saying, I'd like to know which phone to buy. That would be nice. What do you think of the Galaxy S7? That would be nice. Mike Louisville, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Well, hello, Leo. Thank you. I'm sure glad you're there because I got another big one for you.
All right.
And I think it has a little bit to do with Windows as well, Windows 10. I've got an iMac 27. It's a late 2013, 1 terabyte with the Fusion Drive.
Yeah, the Fusion Drive caused problems for Windows.
Yeah, it does, and I can't stand it. And two questions. I tried to do an ISO to do boot. I wanted to do boot camp because I'm going to
get... Let me first say this. I am running Windows 10 on exactly that iMac.
Yeah, I think you were.
With a Fusion Drive. I'm looking at it right now. So the key is you got to get the drivers from Apple. Apple's a manufacturer, and as always with Windows, the best place to get the drivers are from the people that made the hardware. In fact, Microsoft doesn't even provide drivers. You got to get them from Apple.
Yeah.
So the boot camp process after you partition the drive is get download the drivers and put them on. You did that, right?
Yeah, I followed the instructions 15 times exactly to the
key. Well, then what's happening?
Well, it once or twice it actually loaded Windows on as a boot drive, but then when it came time to load those Windows, support drivers, as you just mentioned, it loaded about half of them, and they would stop, and that was it. It would not go any further.
Well, I'm going to run out of time, but the key on this is it does. I'm looking at it. It works. So it didn't work for a long time because of the Fusion Drive, and Windows didn't have drivers for it. Apple does now offer drivers for Windows 10. You either have a bad driver download or a bad ISO download. Something, you know, in other words, this happens. The files you're using are broken somehow. So I would start over. I'd get a new ISO from Microsoft. The new ISO is the CD-ROM freeze-dried or the DVD installer freeze-dried. And then get new drivers from Apple and try over because it should work. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, and VMware Fusion is another way to do it. Let me check real quickly. Use Windows 10 on your Mac with boot camp. Let's just see what Apple says. You need the 64-bit version of Windows. Make sure you're using that. Maybe that's part of the problem. You can't use the 32-bit. Let's make sure. List at the end of this article. iMac 2012, 27-inch is in there, right? Late 2012, not the early 2012. Let me just look and see what I've got. Yeah, I have, and so that's how you do it, right? You look at the, about this Mac, and it'll say this is Apple. Apple doesn't do model numbers, unfortunately. They the way they do it is with this calendar dating. So, if your iMac is 27-inch late 2012, then it should work. If it's not late 2012, I don't know if it's an earlier 27-inch iMac, then it won't work. You can see that's the cutoff. That's the oldest is late 2012 on the iMac. So maybe you need a 64-bit. They don't say anything about Fusion, but I think Fusion was an issue early on with Windows. You know, the other option is to use a virtualization, and that will work on anything that VMware or Parallels or OneBox, what is it called? One Virtual Box will anything that will run those programs will run Windows. Maybe that's the issue. I don't know. My clock calendar says Tuesday instead of Sunday. Why does the clock think it's Tuesday, September 20th?
Wow.
The time's right, though, on the bright side.
Somebody put it by the window, let it adjust itself.
No, I think the calendar's not done by... you have to do the calendar manually, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't think WWV says what day it is. They just say what time it is. John, I don't think you can get the date from the radio, just the time. You have to manually do the date. The date's manual. Right?
It is the 20th. It's just the 20th of March.
Yeah, so just fix the month.
How long has that been wrong? We're going to have to go to the tape and
see. No, it's yeah, you have to. The WWV has a date? Huh. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, outside that area. You know, you can reach me by using Skype. You get a lot of callers from all around the world. It's fun, thanks to the internet. Back to the phones we go. Joe is in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hello, Joe.
How are you doing today, Leo?
Thanks for hanging on.
Fellow ham here, KG4UJC.
W6TWT.
Hello. Hey, got a question for you. I've got a Roku 2.
Yep.
And I just got in Friday the new Raspberry Pi 3.
Isn't that exciting?
I can't believe, you know, for $35 what you're getting in a credit
card. Have you ever played with the Raspberry Pi before?
Yeah, I've actually got one of the Raspberry Pi 2s, and I got a 2B, and then the Raspberry Pi.
Let me explain to people what this is so they understand we're not talking about Pi, although a Raspberry Pi would be nice. We're talking about a computer. It's a little computer, but it's a little computer with a great big heart. $35. It has an HDMI port, an Ethernet port. It has four USB ports. And it can run a special version. Actually, there are many operating systems, but it runs a special version of Linux called Raspbian. And it's really a $35 computer. You add the keyboard, mouse, and monitor, and it can do a lot of things. Hobbyists like to use it because it's inexpensive, and you can make a purpose-built little thing. I'm sure hams love to use it. One of the things I thought I might do is write a Morse code simulator to help me learn Morse code. But so, what do you use yours for?
Well, right now I've got a Roku 2, and I've got the new Raspberry Pi configured with XBMC, and I'm watching.
That's a popular use for the Raspberry Pi. Yeah. As a media center.
And I'm
center.
Watching the Twit network on both devices at
nice.
The same time.
Nice.
And the Roku buffers consistently.
Yeah.
I mean, every 5-10 minutes, it'll or less sometimes. It'll buffer for like 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pi I've been running, and I'm also running my desktop computer, watching it. So I'm actually watching it on three screens.
Now, is it better when you only watch one stream? Because you might be taxing your internet access.
Well, it's funny. You know, the Roku, every few minutes, it'll buffer.
Yeah.
The computer and the Pi's not buffering.
Well, I think that tells you something, doesn't it? So the Roku, yep. Now remember, there's a whole bunch of things that cause buffering. Buffering merely means that, so in order to make streams smooth, if you're watching a video stream, actually this works with audio too, the packets of data have to arrive in a timely fashion in order. If one packet goes missing, there's a gap, and then you'll have... you know, a hesitation or a fluttering sound. And you've heard this, I'm sure, on Skype calls and on streaming audio. Video, it looks, you know, like it's, you know, max headroom. So the way to avoid this, software does something called creates a buffer. But the length of the buffer can vary. There's no standard. Typically, maybe 30 seconds. However long it takes for that stream to start up, that's when it's buffering. So when you first launch a stream, there's a little delay between the time you click the button and the stream starts playing. What's happening there is the software is collecting packets and getting ahead, in effect, and then it starts playing. And if a packet goes missing or doesn't come in order or in time, it it says okay, but that's fine. But that was 30 seconds. You know, that's coming up in 30 seconds. So far, I'm all right. But it will slowly decrease the size of the buffer. And at some point, the buffer gets to zero, and it's not robust. It can't handle missed or dropped or out-of-order packets. So it has to rebuffer. That's what buffering is. I got to build my buffer up again so that I can continue to stream smoothly. But that's a software decision. So it may be that the XBMC software has a larger buffer. It may be that there's less software overhead, so it doesn't, you know, it's not just the internet. It could be the software itself can't keep up and drops packets. There's all sorts of reasons you might use up that buffer and have to create a new one. Sounds like the Roku software is not as good as the XBMC software you're running on your Raspberry Pi.
You know, on your site, you've got several different streaming sites, and I've tried it on different ones, and each one's
You'll get less buffering on the lower quality, of course, because more bits represent more data. You know, fewer bits represent more data. So it's more robust. And that's why on a bad internet connection, you're going to use the slower thing. Not because your internet connection is slow exactly, but because you don't have to worry about drop packets as much.
Well, the Pis are going to end up used in my RV as a media server for movies and DVDs.
Yeah, it's probably the Pi, especially the Pi 3, has a pretty hefty ARM processor. The software it's running, the operating system is lightweight. It probably has a better, faster processor than the Roku does. If you're going to sell a consumer product like the Roku, you're going to use the minimum hardware that you can get away with because you want to make more profit, right? And the software may not be well written. Who knows? I don't know.
And your caller before talking about the networking issues.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Ubiquiti devices. We use Ubiquiti at my job, and we're doing, you know, CCTV, IP cameras,
yeah.
Point-to-point or multi-point-to-point a mile or more with it.
Ubiquiti's great stuff. It's not you know, there's enterprise-grade stuff from companies, traditional enterprise companies like Cisco and HP. Ubiquiti's kind of in between the consumer-grade stuff and the enterprise stuff. It's not super expensive, but it takes some skill to set up. It's a mesh network. I let Russell do all of that. But I have been tempted. I asked Russell the other day, our IT guy, should I put in Ubiquiti stuff? And he said, well, configuration's tricky. And when Russell says that, I go, yeah, I think I'll pass. but you're right. You've got an IT guy, right? And for an enterprise, there's better gear than the consumer stuff. The stuff we get, especially since a lot of consumers buy, you know, $40 Linksys routers. Compare a $40 router to a $4,000 router, which is, you know, I mean, you get what you pay for. So I think probably the Roku is just not as capable as your Raspberry Pi, oddly enough. You know,
it's going to be a lot of fun in the RV with using it for a media server and
all
and
sorts of
like
things.
That.
You know, I tell parents when parents ask me what should we get for our kid? If your kid's kind of geeky, get them a Raspberry Pi. For instance,
good way to learn code.
Absolutely. And there's a special version of Minecraft that comes with the Pi that allows you to code. You could play the game, but you can then write your own Python code in Minecraft and build stuff with code. And what a great way to learn to code, to take advantage of a kid's natural passion for the game. And then you say, well, you know, Junior, if you only knew a little Python, you could build that house with one line of code. And that gets them interested. So I love it for that reason, too. It is really great. Lots of places.
Have a good day, Leo.
You too. Thanks for the call. 73. Lots of places to get the Raspberry Pi. The newest, the Raspberry Pi 3, has more memory and a faster processor. But it's the same exact shape, so you can use all the doohickeys and devices that were designed for the Raspberry Pi 2. It's an educational computer. It was designed to be an educational computer by the Raspberry Pi Foundation in the UK. And I think they found a wonderful audience, $35. And it runs, you know, Linux, and it's powerful, and it's a great way to learn to program. And it would be a great computer for a kid. Just kind of start him getting into this kind of thing. I love this idea. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. You can find out more about the Raspberry Pi. Just Google Raspberry Pi, like the number Pi. And there are lots of places that sell it. I'm particularly fond of a store called Adafruit, adafruit.com. They have Raspberry Pi kits and parts and pieces and projects. Then it's a great place to start. Adafruit.com. We'll put that all on our website, TechEyeLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More calls right after this. I know I bought 2 Raspberry Pis. I don't even know what I'm going to do with them. That's how this whole Minecraft server thing started, is I first put it on a Raspberry Pi. And then I thought, well, maybe I should put some more power into it. And by the time I'm done, I'm running a Mac Pro and 3 different instances of Minecraft servers and a web server and an email server. Easy to get in trouble. Nah, you know, Florida vet, we're old-fashioned. We're old school. Kids don't need to go outside anymore. It's good training for the day when we all have to live underground. Right? Good for MAME. That's right. That's right, Nightstar. It's a really good MAME platform. Most of those MAME games don't need a whole lot of juice. Only the more recent MAME games do. I like the tubular Mac. I'm finally found a use for it. Although it still has problems. It's really interesting. It's just there's something wrong, kind of fundamentally wrong about it. Yeah, the BBC computer. Yeah, I think the BBC computer inspired the Pi, right? Our show today brought to you by Prosper. Brilliant. This is the internet at its best. Instead of borrowing money from Uncle Louie, who's never going to let you forget it, even when you pay it back, or using your higher interest rate credit cards. What are they charging? What's it like 20, 21% now yearly? It's crazy. It's crazy. Or going to a bank, then you got to put on pants, a necktie, you got to beg. I'm not doing that. If you need cash and you need it quick, you need Prosper. See, here's how the internet gets involved. It's what we call a peer-to-peer lending service. So a marketplace, really, because it brings borrowers like you and me together with people who have money to lend. They're investors. You know, they love this because, you know, they're going to get a great return. You're going to get a great interest rate. And everybody's happy. You can borrow as much as $35,000 in as few as 5 days right in your bank account. First thing I do, consolidate all your credit cards into one low fixed rate loan. Now, you want to know how much? Well, it varies depending on your credit, but it's easy to find out without affecting your good credit. Go to prosper.com/techguy. You answer just a few questions, and they will tell you what your how much you could borrow and what your interest would be. But it's always a low fixed rate, always. Much better than the credit cards or even Uncle Louie. Go to prosper.com. It's kind of like Airbnb or Uber for borrowing money. It's the internet's answer to the bank loan. And you can borrow money for just about anything you want at a very low fixed rate. It's such a good solution. You may not need it today, but make a note of this. prosper.com/techguy. And we thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. In half an hour, we'll talk digital. Not even that long. 10 minutes. My, how time flies. We'll talk digital photography. Chris Marquardt has the week off. He's been traveling. But Anthony Tortoriello, our fill-in photographer from Oahu, will join us and talk about water photography. But first, back to the phones. Kathleen from Rancho Cucamonga. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, how are you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
So, hopefully this will be an easy one for you.
Good.
I was watching a program on the DVR and walked out of the room, and when I came back, my LG was black. And I haven't
been
able
to... Oh, no.
Yeah, I don't know. It didn't give me, like, any warning or anything. So, I thought, first, well, I'll fix it. But then when I look on Best Buy, I see I can literally buy a 55-inch 1080p for like $500.
I know, they've gotten really cheap. How old is the LG?
It's actually, when I figured it out, I realized it's like 10 years old, so it's not really.
Yeah, perfect. Might be time. It may be fixable. Who knows? I mean, it might just be a bad cable, so it'd probably be prudent to just, you know, I mean, you don't want to throw out a perfectly good TV because the cable went bad, but yes, now is a good time to buy a new TV.
So then when I'm looking, I see there's 2164Ks for $1,000, like a 55-inch Samsung.
Right.
But then I from listening to you, I understand there really isn't a lot of content.
Well, it's just beginning. You remember when HD TV became the thing? At first, there were 10 movies, right? And a Blu-ray player was $1,000.
Right.
So we're actually in a little bit of a better position. The movie industry settled on 4K a long time ago for content. So most movies are in that resolution or better anyway. It's just a question of kind of mastering the discs. And it's only been in the last month or so that the special 4K Blu-ray players have been available. The good news is they're not as expensive this time around. They start around $400. And there are, I just saw a list, about 25 movies out there, but there'll be more quickly. There is, and you've heard us maybe talk about this, there are streaming sources of 4K, but I wouldn't get overexcited about those because Netflix and Vudu and Amazon are providing what they say is 4K, even YouTube is, but they have to compress it so heavily to get it over the internet that I don't know if you're seeing all the quality that you'd want to see. You said it the right way, by the way. I'm going to start a campaign to call it not 4K or Ultra HD, but 2160K, or P, rather. Because it is. It's just 1080 times 2. So we have 720P, which is probably what your old TV is, 1080P, which is what HD is, full HD, and the new standard, which is 2160P.
Actually, my LG was a 1080 Smart TV, and I didn't even know that it was a smart TV until I moved in here a year ago and had internet through my phone.
All of a sudden, it's smart.
Yeah, I'm like, what? I can do Facebook on my TV? Are you kidding me?
Is it the LG is an LCD or plasma? Do you know?
It was a LCD, okay. LED LCD.
Yeah, that's not 10 years old. It can't be. Is it really?
I'm pretty sure I bought it when I was up in Valley Springs, and that was about 9 or 10 years
ago. All right. Yes, LED backlit LCDs have gotten better. Much. If it had been plasma, I might be tempted to say try to get it fixed because they don't even, it's hard, you can't buy plasmas anymore. Everybody stopped making them. And those were really a better technology. We have a new technology, OLED. In fact, LG makes an OLED. They're very pricey, but they are easily the best looking TVs out there. So it kind of depends on your budget. But you said $1,000. There's some great choices out there for $1,000.
So that's my question. Should I go for a 2160 or should I just go with a 1080p?
I think it's fine to go with a 1080p as long as you understand that in a few years you probably will want 2160. At this point, though, the problem with it, first of all, a lot of TVs that you're looking at, even the least expensive ones, are 2160. That's just because everybody's moved to 4K. But there's a standard that if you're going to buy a 4K TV today, I would get UHD Premium. That's the standard. And that's the one that's going to give you there's more than just number of dots. There's HDR, high dynamic range. That makes a big difference. There's the color gamut that it can give you. And these new color gamuts are even more complete than the old ones, which means more accurate colors. That's all supplied by UHD Premium. So if you were to get a 4K TV, I would look for a UHD Premium TV. That will also work best with the new Blu-ray players, the new UHD Blu-ray players. Otherwise, a 1080p is fine.
All right. So if I go with a 1080p, I have a couple of questions on that.
Yeah.
There's one that, like, for $400, it's just a smart HD 1080. But for another $100, they have something called, it's the same LG with a true color, a true motion 120 smart web browser.
No, you don't want that. First of all, you're never going to browse the web on your TV. That's
okay.
A terrible experience. And the true motion I don't like, which is it because your TV is getting 60 fields a second, 30 frames a second. But that's not enough for on an LCD, particularly for action like sports or blowing up movies, but their things blow up. And so what they do is they add extra frames to do 120p. There's no more data. They just add extra frames. And it gives it a weird plasticky look, in my opinion. It looks more like a soap opera, more like video than film.
Okay.
So I don't personally like that effect. Even if I have it on a TV, I turn it off and I wouldn't pay extra for it. Unless you're a big sports fanatic and you care more about the smoothness of the football sailing through the air than you do the realism of the image.
Okay, then I have one other question. There's another one which is a HD LED, and with Roku.
Roku is a better smart TV than the one that's in most smart TVs. Now, LG might be the exception. I haven't played with the new LGs. They're using WebOS, which they bought from HP, which was created by Palm for phones, and it's actually a good operating system, and I'm very curious how well they're doing that. But in general, smart TVs are pretty dumb. I don't like them. And the Roku or an external box like Apple TV or Roku or Android TV would really be a better choice.
The Roku is an external box?
Well, no. What they did is they licensed the Roku software and they built it into the TV. So it's in the TV. And that's better than the junky software, because TV companies aren't good at software, frankly. And so, especially Samsung, horrible software. So I would rather see a Roku in a set, either through an external box or, hey, that's great, they're offering Roku.
Yeah, well, okay, so I'm kind of leaning, because that's a 55-inch for $500.
Spend the money on the bigger set. That you'll get more benefit from than anything else. As long as it looks good to you in the store, the size really matters.
It does, because I'm legally blind.
So then you really want a big set, yeah. Hey, it's a great time to be buying. This spring is the new model year. This is when the new TVs come out. So absolutely, go to the store. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, on a trip. He went to Tuscany, and then I can't wear the Ukraine or somewhere on a photo expedition. But fortunately, we are not left in the lurch, because we've got Anthony Atort in the chat room. Anthony Tortoriello, he is a professional photographer working in one of the best places to be a professional photographer, which is Oahu, Hawaii. Hello, Anthony. Good to see you again.
Good morning, Leo. Hello, everyone.
Is it a beautiful day in paradise once again?
Yeah, not too shabby.
Do you live like in the country? Like out in, like, because I hear chickens and birds and...
Yep. A little small sugar cane plantation town called Wailua, North Shore, Oahu.
Oh, how fun. So you got the big city there, but you also can...
I mean, they call Honolulu town. So that's essentially our city.
How far is it to Honolulu? How long is the drive?
Roughly a half hour. Local people, they make it sound like it's 3 hours.
Oh, you got to go all the way into town, man. Oh, yeah. No good.
People get really just, you know, complacent, I guess. It's a good thing.
So, and for a photographer, it's important to, I think, be somewhere both near a city so you can, you know, you can commune with the you know, rest of the world, but also somewhere where you can really be an artist.
Yeah, I mean, Leo, I'm having a little tough time hearing you.
Okay. I can't do anything about that.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'll shout. How about that? I know it's a long way to Oahu.
So you were saying something about Honolulu.
Yeah, don't worry. Just go ahead and tell us, what's your tip for the week?
No, I was going to give a composition tip. I mean, it's something that we all struggle with on occasion. So, I mean, it was something, you know, even I heard from another photographer saying to have an area of interest in every corner of your frame. So, I mean, if you take a picture and something doesn't add something to the picture visually, you know, in one of the corners of the frame, kind of sit with it and recompose. There may be something going on with your composition. I mean, another good thing to take advantage of, a lot of these new cameras have articulating and pivoting LCDs. So get low, change up your perspective, you know, sit instead of like having to lay down on the sand or what we do here in Hawaii.
I was watching a documentary on a woman named Vivian Meyer, who was a nanny.
Chicago, too.
And a brilliant photographer who never showed her photos to anyone, and was discovered when a fella bought the contents of her storage locker, found all the negatives, had them printed, and the photographic world has gone crazy. She shot with a Hasselblad, which is a camera that you shoot at waist level and you look down through the viewfinder. And she had an interesting technique. So, like you say, and you can do this with an articulated LCD, too. You can put the camera at your waist level and look down. But she had a great technique, which is, she would take pictures of people, and people weren't so aware of the camera because it wasn't in front of her face. She would compose it, then look them in the eyes, look up at them, and wait till she looked at her, and had an expression, and then she would take the picture. So if you look at her pictures, a lot of them are shot kind of from below, and the person whose picture it is looking up over the camera because they're looking at Vivian. And it's a fascinating effect.
Yeah, she was a master at that.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
It was very inspiring. So you could do that with your camera if you have an articulated lens or LCD.
Yeah, I mean, again, I mean, you know, sitting with an object, a lot of people, you know, say a flower, for example, you can sit with the object and stay, you know, and take your time with it, sit for an hour and shoot high, shoot low, you know, and right when you think you got your shot, sit and recompose again and see if you can, you know, do something more with it. So again, taking your time is a big part, and, you know, and understanding your subject matter, you know, respecting your subject matter, even say we're doing the turtle thing or anything with nature. You know, having respect and an understanding of what the movements are going to be and what their behaviors and patterns are, that's always going to help as well.
What do you do when you're ready to take a picture? You know, you kind of in your mind know what you're looking for, or you just shoot and hope for the best. How do you prepare for a picture?
You know what? A lot of times I use my iPhone as almost a Polaroid. So I kind of rough in the composition with my phone, and then I lock it into my camera. I find that to be a really kind of handy tip or technique that works for me, because a lot of times you can just be more, you know, and it's more natural too. We're with our iPhones or our mobile devices all the time, so it's just more natural. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of, you know, you see something visually. I mean, obviously as a photographer, you pay attention to light, so always draw on the light, pay attention to light. If something's well lit, say, you know, there's a beautiful light, most likely there's going to be a beautiful image to follow.
I have a photographer, by the way, a great trick I use, or not trick, but kind of standard I have, is to look at other photographers and look at what they do. And then to the degree that they talk about it, read about their technique, how they do it. And there's a photographer I like a lot, and he has, I don't know if I could say this on the air, he has something he calls the fart technique.
Okay.
And it starts with an F, which is to find the thing that grabbed you, that fascinated you, and to be kind of inspired by that. And then A is, I'm going to have to look this up because I want to get all of the acronyms, right. His name
there,
is,
you don't want to mess that one up.
I don't want to mess. His name is Ken Rockwell. F is feel. So he says, as you're walking by something, you're going to have a feeling that something grabbed you, and you want to listen for that feeling. You were saying that exactly. Something grabs you. A is to ask, what is it that grabbed me? Is it the color? Is it the lines? Is it the shapes? Is it the story that's going on? Then refine that. So get your, that's the R, get to that point where you're figuring out what it is that you're trying to show in the picture, and then refine it so you get that shot, you know, so that you show the line, that you show the texture, and to find, of course, the T is to take the picture. Now, I know it's a silly acronym, but I keep in mind, and by the way, Ken's a great photographer, I keep it in my mind because it does help me say, what was it that grabbed me, right? What was the thing that got my attention?
Yeah, I mean, Jay Mizell is a photographer out of New York.
Love
and he
Jay.
Always said something, you know, obviously have your camera with you at all times. And another thing was do your visual push-ups every day, you know, just like a bodybuilder would go to the gym, for example.
What are those? What are the push-ups I should be doing on my
just
camera?
Just taking a picture and trying to, you know, get some kind of image every day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, flex your visual muscle, your creative muscles.
I think you're right. I have started carrying my camera every day, but I have to say most people do anyway.
Which one?
Well, this one is the Leica Q, but which is a nice, compact, lightweight, excellent camera, simple camera. But really, your camera phone might be the camera of choice these days. You always have it with you, and they're great, aren't they?
Yeah, they're good.
Anthony Tortoriello.
I don't know if you want to see Leo. Just so you know, the Sony, the A7R2.
What is that?
Since we're talking water.
What is that this thing is you're holding up?
That's the water housing. So this is an Aquatech housing for the A7R2, but this is essentially what look at the gets size of that all thing. The turtle images and nice. All the imagery.
Anthony Tortoriello, it's atortphotography.com. I thank you so much for filling in for Chris Marquardt the last 3 weeks. Chris will be back next week. And remember, take some water pictures. That's our assignment. Upload them to the Flickr group, the Tech Guy group, and Chris will probably be picking 3 pictures next week or the week after. Thank you, Anthony.
Yeah, thanks, Leo.
Mahalo. Aloha. It's
Don Moore. Aloha.
Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Where are your calls to come right after this? Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888, ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. Dorothy. Oh, Dorothy. She's in France. We talked to you yesterday. Get on the phone here. You're way far away. Hello? And there she goes. So, but I know what your call is about, Dorothy. So, this is kind of the reverse of the call we usually get. She is living in France. She's American living
She's
in
back.
France. She's back? All right. What line here?
The
six?
Yeah.
Are you back there? Can I hear you now?
I can hear you great, Leo.
Okay, get over to the phone somehow. You're on a speakerphone or?
No, I'm on my...
Okay, lean your head into the microphone on the laptop.
I'm on a little... Maybe I should take it out.
No. Okay. What can I do for you?
Is that better?
No. All right. Tell you what, Dorothy. I'm going to put you on hold. Going to let Kim figure this out. But I do know what your call is this time. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out. Hold is a complicated thing for me on this. I don't know. Now I've locked her. Press hold.
There.
Okay.
Hi, Dorothy.
Oh, there we go. When you're the tech guy, sometimes the tech goes wildly wrong. So Dorothy lives in France. And she is going to come to the United States. So this is the opposite of what we often see, where a lot of our callers are American going to Europe. Kind of a similar issue, though, right? She thinks she wants a Wi-Fi hotspot. She says she's driving in a car with four adults, and she wants everybody wants internet access. And they need internet access that. That isn't going to cost an arm and a leg in the United States. So the probable best thing to do, depends on how long you're going to be here, but this is the same thing we did when we went to Europe. Lisa and I went to London last year, and we got a Wi-Fi card. I call them MiFis. That's what the original brand name was. But the MiFi card is basically like a credit card-sized device, battery-powered. It gets its internet access from LTE and then turns itself into a Wi-Fi hotspot. So depending on the card, as many as 5 or 6 people can use it. Now, remember, you're all sharing what is essentially a little bit of a slow connection. But the nice thing is you rent the card or you pay for the card and you pay for the internet access. And because you're buying it from a local provider, not from a provider from some other country, it's a lot less expensive. The real cost of travel is data roaming. That is using a data network in another country because your provider, whether it's French or American, has to pay a lot for you to use it. They overcharge, and then they charge you extra. So it can cost a lot. In fact, tens of thousands of dollars. I've seen people come back from Europe with an iPhone when they first came out, and because nobody was prepared for this, and get a $10,000 bill. What? Because the data phones are always online. They're always downloading email and all of this stuff, and they just weren't prepared for that. So, yeah, I like the idea of getting this MiFi. We did this. In London, we bought it from a company called Three. It was a fairly inexpensive rate. We just rented the Wi-Fi card, and we gave it back when we went home, but we were able to have internet access. The only negative was battery life. Now, you're in a car, so you can plug it in and keep it charged, but as we were walking around London, we'd only get about 8 hours before the thing died. But the whole time you're walking around, your phone, you turn off data roaming. This is really important on your phone and on your laptop and everything else. You don't want it to be data roaming. You just connect it to the MiFi card, that credit card-sized device, and that's getting cheap internet or cheap, relatively cheap local internet and giving it to you via Wi-Fi. So that's a very good solution. If you're coming in the United States, every carrier, T-Mobile, Verizon, AT&T, and Sprint all sell these. You can go to one of those stores and just pick one up. I don't know if rental. I had told her yesterday on the show that the website to look at is Prepaid with Data. It's a wiki, Prepaid with Data. It's .wikia.com, but if you just Google Prepaid with Data, you'll find it. Old Geek in the Bronx, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Old Geek.
Hi, how you doing, Leo? Can you hear me?
I can. What can I do for you?
Well, I've got this problem with sharing on the Google Universe. I've been trying to share through Google Photos, setting up a folder that's shareable, and that doesn't work. Also, from the Google...
Let me ask you what it is you want to do, Mr. Geek.
I want to share some of my collection of sketches that I made.
Okay.
Privately.
So our connection is terrible. So I'm not sure if that's... I don't know what it is. Our connection's terrible. It's raining. Maybe that's it. But let me just answer without plaguing the people listening on the radio with that connection. Yeah, Google Photos has a great solution. So if it's sketches, obviously you've taken pictures of them and you've uploaded them. And if you take pictures with your smartphone, and nowadays the cameras on smartphones are probably good enough that that works, and you upload them to Google Photos, there's a couple of choices you have in Google Photos. You can get a link, a shareable link, for one by one to do it. And that may be sufficient. I certainly don't encourage attaching images to emails. The quality images are giant. They're many megabytes. It's rude to send people, giant attachments. Plus, as you probably heard me say once or twice or 1,000 times, don't open attachments. That's the number one way viruses get spread. Much safer to send a link to the Google image, to the image on Google Photos that people can click and then go there. And they can see it. And if they want to download it, they can do that as well. So that's one way. If you click the menu on your on an individual photo, you'll see, or actually it's a share menu, you'll see one way to share it is to get a downloadable link. Another way is, it sounds like you tried it, and I think this is a good way to do it, a shareable folder. You put them all in a folder, then you can get a link to that folder and share that with people. In both cases, the link, I don't think they need to log into their Google account. The shareable photo, they might, and that might be a disadvantage if people don't have a Google account. That might be more of a trial. There are lots of other ways to share photos. In fact, this is one of the number one things photo sites offer. Apple does it with their Photos solution. Flickr is a great choice. That's the site we use for our photo, assignments. Flickr.com. It's free. It's a Yahoo site. You can create a folder and you can share it with people. Facebook allows you to do this, and Facebook will, of course, control privacy and so forth. So, hear that rain? Can you hear that? That might be why the old geek's phone was. might have been us. It's pouring in Northern California right now. So there are lots of ways to share photos. I think that's probably one of the things the internet is best at. You shouldn't have too much trouble doing that. Hey, I'm not going to ring my doorbell. It's ring doorbell time, and I'm not going to ring it. You know why? Because I got an email from somebody who says, every time you do the ring ad and you ring the doorbell, the dog barks because he thinks it's my ring video doorbell ringing. And actually, I have ring software on all my smartphones and tablets. So when somebody comes to our door, whether they ring the doorbell or not, I get a chime. And it's like Pavlov's dog. I go, what? I love the Ring Video doorbell. I installed this myself. I'm so proud because I am not a handyman. We had, like most people, you move into a house, you got this kind of funky old yellowing loose button hanging off the door doorbell, right? Why is it they're always like that? And the chimes, why is it they're always so bad? Donk, donk. They're terrible. I could never, for a long time, I'd go, is somebody at the door? I don't know. Can you tell? Lisa said, I don't hear anybody. I said, no, I think I heard it. We were so happy when we found this. It took me about half an hour, maybe 45 minutes to install. And as I said, I'm no handyman. But you know what's nice? The Ring Video doorbell comes with all the stuff you need. A drill bit, a screwdriver, even a level so you can install it nicely. They have all different finishes. I think we have the bronze one at home. Now, here's what's cool about this. This doorbell, you just take off that old funky doorbell, trim the two wires will be coming out of your door jamb. You attach them to the terminals there. This is the base plate. You attach the doorbell to it. Now, this has got a high-quality HD wide-angle camera, microphone, and speakers. So you can see what's outside your door. When the doorbell rings, it doesn't just ring the chimes at home. And by the way, they even have a replacement chime if you need one. If you got, like me, a dink-donk, donk, you can. They have a little chime you just plug into the wall. This all connects up to your Wi-Fi. And now it doesn't just ring the chime at home. It rings at my phone, at my tablet, no matter where I am, anywhere in the world, over the internet. Then I can say, if it's a doorbell ring, I can press a button and talk to the person. I can see their picture. They can hear me. So if it's a UPS guy and I'm not home, but I want him to leave the package, say, I'm in the shower. Can you just leave it there? Oh, yeah, sure, Leo. Oh, thank you. You don't want to see me. I'm in the shower. But I'm not. I'm at work. And then I can keep an eye on the package because anytime there's motion anywhere in the area, and by the way, you can completely configure that. So when somebody's in my driveway or coming up the steps, I can see it and I have video of it and stores it online so you can check it anytime on your smartphone. You want to see? People don't believe me, so I'll show you. Let me launch my smartphone, launch the Ring software here, and show you. I can see all the last few people have been outside my door. I see all the last few ding dongs. Here's somebody rang my doorbell 11:28 this morning, and you can see it, and you can talk to them. This is like caller ID for your house. So it looks like, oh yeah, yeah, that's Sarah. She rang it, but then nobody was home, so she went on in. But see, now I know. Sarah came at 11:28. This is awesome. If you have teenagers, they can come home at 3 in the morning. Let me show you. I don't know if I have any in the middle of the night. It's great night vision. If you've got teenagers, you can see when they came home. They say, no, Dad, I came home early. I say, well, I'm sorry, but I see. Here's the video of you coming. Wait, you're going out at 11 p.m.? What are you doing? I love this. $200, we're going to get you expedited FedEx shipping if you go to ring.com/tech guy. It's so cool to have this time-stamped record. And by the way, you can have multiple devices. So you have one on your front door, right? But you're going to put one around the back gate. So you just add a device, and now you got it all on your phone or your tablet. It's so awesome. ring.com/tech guy. This is what the Internet of Things is all about. I love this idea. ring.com/tech guy. By the way, you might have heard a couple of months ago, a security expert said, wait a minute, if somebody steals your Ring, he can get your Wi-Fi password. He told Ring before he released that to the public, I didn't know this, Ring has an over-the-air update capability. They fixed the flaw before anybody even knew about it, and nobody was bit. That's cool. Over-the-air updates. That's what Steve Gibson says this. Every IoT, Internet of Things device in your house should be updatable in case of software flaws. This is ring.com/tech guy. I love this thing. This is genuine testimonial. I'm testifying. ring.com/tech guy. Free expedited FedEx shipping. And by the way, this would be great for an elder in your family, your parents, anybody who's concerned. When my daughter gets her apartment, you better believe I'm getting her a Ring. And I might even, keep a... No, I wouldn't do that. Put it on my phone, too? No, shouldn't do that. That would be mean. I know what you're up to, Abby. ring.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, the first day of spring... Or the first day of autumn, if you're in the Southern Hemisphere. 8888. Ask Leo is the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Lawrence in Los Angeles. Hi, Lawrence. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I jumped in with both feet into the e-world. And for an octogenarian, it's not very easy, I'll tell you that.
It's not easy for a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 20-year-old. It's not easy for anybody. But good on you for doing it.
Saw my 3-year-old grandson do better than I could.
Well, they did grow up with it, right?
So anyway, I bought a MacBook Pro 15-inch El Capitan, and I fiddled with that for a month, and then I complicated my life by buying an iPad, so I bought an iPad 2 Air, and with a thumb drive, I was able to, with the help of others, put four home movies onto my screen as MP3s. And then
MP4s, yeah. MP3s are audio. MP4s are video.
Oh, so and they're about 190 gigabytes each. So then I tried to, what I tried to do was share these videos with the family. So I wanted to email them. I couldn't do that.
Wait a minute, 190 gigabytes each?
Yeah, they're 2 hours.
No. Yeah, okay, so we can make them smaller than that. That's really big. And yeah, you can never, you won't share that with anybody. You'd have to mail them a hard drive.
Oh, hard drive.
A gigabyte, 190 gigabytes?
Well, it says 189.1.89 gigabytes.
Wow. No, that's 1.8 gigabytes. That's more like it.
Okay,
typically, a gigabyte an hour is about what you get for a high-def movie.
Oh, it's approximately less than 2 gigabytes.
Yes, it's less than 2 gigabytes. If it were 190 gigabytes, well, that'd be different. Right. 2 gigabytes is about right. About a gigabyte an hour. You can get it down to smaller if you're really, willing to lower the quality.
So the first thing I did was I tried to use email, and I couldn't do that.
No.
And then I tried to do iTunes, and that wouldn't work.
No, nobody will let you transmit that size of a file.
Right, and then I called Apple support, and I was on the line with them for about an hour. And
what?
They couldn't figure this out for me.
Oh, come on. That's not useful. All right, here, let me tell you. It's very simple.
They said, go to iCloud. You'll have to use iCloud. So I went to iCloud, and I only had, 50 gigabytes?
Let me tell you what to do, okay? Would you want to hear the answer? It's easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Upload it to YouTube.
Upload to YouTube, huh?
Yeah, it's free.
Yeah.
You upload the movie there. It'll take a while. You got to upload it. They got to chew on it. But eventually, you'll get a link. Now, that link can be public or private. This is something probably people don't know, is you could put stuff on YouTube that's private. That, and then you get a link to it, you share it with your friends and family, only they can see it.
Okay, now, what's a link?
So the idea is you cannot send a giant file. There, you know, email boxes sometimes are limited to 10 megabytes, 1/1000th of that size.
Right.
So that would be, 1/500th of that size. So that would be tantamount to, you know, taking a giant turkey and stuffing it into somebody's roadside mailbox. They wouldn't like that much. They'd never get any other email until they cleared it out. So you don't want to stuff that turkey into their mailbox. What you want to do is say, give them a pointer to the turkey. You want to say, hey, I have put a turkey here. If you want to see it, here's where it is. You're giving them an address. It's like, oh, think of it as a ticket, and you can email that. It's small. They get the ticket, and they go, ah, the turkey is stored on a site called YouTube. By the way, there are other sites that'll do this too, but YouTube's free. Why not use YouTube? There's Vimeo and other places you can store videos, but I like YouTube for this. And then they get the ticket, which is, we call it a link. It's the thing you click when you click a word in a browser, and it takes you to a website. That's a link to that browser. So you want to give people the link to the video, not the video. You want to, you know, if you're pointing at the moon, you don't want to give them the moon. You want to give them the finger that's pointing at the moon. Don't give them a finger. Give them the finger that's pointing to the moon. It's a difference. So you understand now what I'm saying is you're giving them a link.
But what I don't understand is why I have to go outside of my computer. Isn't there something in the computer like...
No, because your computer is not publicly shared on the internet, I hope.
No, it's not. But
right, so you're going to have to put that file on somewhere that is publicly shared to the internet.
iCloud, what they did
okay,
was...
you can do it to iCloud. But the problem is with iCloud, unless you're paying for more than... This is why Apple told you to do this, by the way.
I did that. I signed up for another...
Greed, because you get 5 gigabytes for free.
So I got signed up for 50 for...
Yeah. Hello. Thank you, Apple, for being really thoughtful.
Right.
Really, really caring about your customer. Oh, yeah, we could solve this. See, it's two things. First of all, they don't want to tell you about anything that's not Apple. Apple loves you to live in the Apple world. There's nothing out there besides Apple. So they don't want you to know about it, A. And B, they want to make a little more money on you, because if you live in the Apple world, all the money goes to them.
Right.
So YouTube is a website run by Google, YOUTUBE.com. You'll need to have a Google account. That's free and easy to set up. Do you have a Gmail, for instance? You have Google Mail?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so you have a Google account. So you go to YouTube and log in with your Gmail login and password. And now you're in your, you actually have a YouTube channel. You just didn't know it. That's part of the deal. And you can, there's an upload video button. You upload the video. So understand, the video has to exist somewhere that your friends can access. That wouldn't be your computer, because
how do I physically upload the video button? Right now, my videos are on iCloud.
Do you have a wheelbarrow? No, I'm teasing you. Stop it. That was mean, Leo. Just the same way you put it on iCloud, you upload it to YouTube. So what you didn't know probably is that iCloud did it without you asking it to. It uploaded to iCloud. I don't recommend storing large videos on iCloud because it gets very expensive very fast.
Right, right.
So what I would recommend is putting it somewhere where it's inexpensive. In the case of YouTube, free.
Okay.
So what you'll do is you'll, in your web browser, you'll go to YouTube.com. And you'll then log in. Make sure you log in because you want it to be your account.
Right.
And then there's a, it's hard to see because it's, there's a lot of text on the page. Google's not great at web design. So there's a lot of text. But if you look and you look at every bit of text and you find it, there's a button that says upload videos. You might have to go into your account. You might, this is the hardest part of the whole thing, by the way, is finding the button to push that says upload a video. But once you push that button, then it'll open a box that says, okay, what video? Now, do you still have the video on your hard drive?
It's right now. I'm looking at the iCloud.
But do you have it locally, not iCloud?
I think I have it on iMovies.
So, okay. So there's one more step because you need to export it from iMovie into a file.
Okay, can I export it from iCloud into a file?
Actually, you know what? You can export it from iMovie to YouTube. iMovie, unless they've taken this out, has a upload to YouTube button.
Okay.
That'll simplify the whole process.
Right.
So iMovie, the format that's stored in iMovie is not a format suitable for sharing. It's a format suitable for you to continue to edit and modify the movie. So you'll need to export it into a format that you can share. That's the movie that would then get uploaded to iCloud. But if the same place where it says upload the movie to iCloud, there's an upload to YouTube, unless they've taken it out.
So no, I've seen that. But
yeah. So upload to YouTube. It'll say, well, what's your YouTube account? You give it your Gmail credentials. That's what you give it, your Gmail address and the password that you use to log into Gmail. You give it that. It'll then, from then on, it won't ask for that. It'll be linked to your YouTube account. And then anytime you make a movie, you just say upload to YouTube. It uploads it to a YouTube, and then it'll give you a private address that you can share with your family members. They'll click that link. That's a ticket to that movie, and it'll launch in their browser. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to put that link on the chat room. Thank you. Let's put that Instructables link in the on the website. I don't know how this is going to work. How's James going to get that information? That's a good website. How to upload videos to YouTube using iMovie. There you go. It's kind of an older article, but I think the steps are pretty much the same. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Let's see. So, Lawrence, let me just real quickly check back in with Lawrence. Lawrence, did that all make sense to you?
Partly it did, but now I don't know how to get my movies back into from iCloud.
That's all right. You can leave them there.
Yeah, but if I want to go to YouTube and transfer them.
No, you can have, you know what the beauty of digital is? You can have as many copies as you want. So you don't need to get them from iCloud. They're still an iMovie, right?
Well, that's a good question. There's a thing there that says iMovie, and it shows movies 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah,
it doesn't show them separate. It shows that as a block.
Yeah, when it uploads them to iCloud as a backup, it doesn't move them to iCloud. It copies them to iCloud.
Okay. So it's still in there somewhere.
It's still on. Unless you explicitly, you have to explicitly tell it, delete these movies. And I don't think you did that.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. So there's still an iMovie. So you just, and I'm going to put, there's a, we just put it in the, somebody put it in the chat room. You, how to upload videos to YouTube using iMovie. It's on a website called Instructables.
Right.
And it has, you know, kind of the step-by-step. It's pretty simple. You actually, you know what? You don't even need to go to this article. It has one step. You have transferred the video files from your camera to the computer. Check. You have created a YouTube account. Well, you did that when you created a Gmail account, so check. iMovie's installed on your computer. Check. Go to the menu. And, oh, I guess they have a YouTube video for the rest of it. But you go to a menu in iMovie that says post on YouTube. It's actually about as easy as can be. And right. YouTube is a, I don't know why Apple didn't tell you this, because it really is the better way to do it. You don't want to pay for that storage. You want
well, what they did suggest is go to App Store and look for an app that'll do this automatically.
Again, they'd like to keep you in that Apple ecosystem.
And then I went to Google and looked up for apps for transferring, and there was a couple of them, but I don't know anything about these.
No, you got the, this is a, by the way, whoever you were talking to was a nitwit, because Apple makes this easy by building this into iMovie. Well, so the guy obviously had never used iMovie.
Oh, he didn't tell me that.
Yeah.
And that,
get an app. There's an app for that. I saw it on TV.
About the second time I went to Apple on the phone, and I attend the classes, and I even attended a video class, and they didn't give me that information either. So I don't know.
Well, do you have you opened iMovie? Do you see that upload to YouTube selection there?
Well, let's see. I'll have to.
It
do
should
that.
Be right near the iCloud one, because that's the other option. Unless they took it out, they may have. Maybe they've taken it out now. I don't have iMovie on this system, so I can't do it. But that was the whole point. The reason Apple did that is what an easy way to share this. Somebody in the chat room, are you looking at iMovie there? Can you see if the current version of iMovie still has a post to YouTube button? Maybe they took that out. I don't know why they would have, except that, well, when we said it, didn't we? They want to keep you in the world of Apple. Apple hates Google. Have you noticed that? It's another problem. Google doesn't like Apple that much, but Apple hates Google. It's still there. Thank you. Beatmaster in our chat room, who's in Switzerland, has checked, and he says it is still there. You can upload to YouTube. That's the easiest thing to do. And then once you upload to YouTube, you'll have a link you can share. And that, again, that's like the, not the movie, but the ticket. So you, and you put that in their mailbox, and they go, oh, look, a ticket to a movie. And they then they click it on their browser. YouTube fires up. They've probably, everybody's used YouTube by now, so they'll understand. There's the movie. Hey, look, there's Lawrence. There's his movie. Noah, Rockford, Michigan. Hi, Noah. Hello, Noah. It is raining. Maybe he's busy building his boat. Noah? I hate to hang up on Noah because he might need help. I'll tell you what. I'll put him on hold. And, Kim, if you can figure out, does he need to know what a qubit is? Is that the problem?
He's there.
Okay. Noah, are you there?
Yes.
There we go.
Transmitting from the microphone from working on my phone.
That happens sometimes. What can I do for you?
Okay, so my sister is going to France in May, and she's going to be there for 13 days, and she's actually going to France and Germany. And she was wondering what's the best way that she could travel, because they both, or everyone needs to be able to at least call and text, but she wants to have data so she can, like,
yeah, of course she does. It's the greatest thing in the world. It's changed international travel. I can be in Paris and I can wander out the door and not have to worry about getting lost. In fact, I've done this because all I do is I open my iPhone and my select Google Maps and I say, take me back to the hotel, and it walks you back in English. Plus, if you're in a neighborhood and you go, I'm hungry, you can fire up a Zagat Guide or Google Maps and it'll tell you what's a good restaurant? We've used that, too. It's a wonderful thing. But the key is, as I mentioned earlier, the cost of international data roaming is exorbitant. You don't want to do international data roaming, so you need to make arrangements. You can call your phone company. Who do you know what carrier they use?
Yeah, she's on Verizon, and she has an iPhone 6.
The worst. Okay. So, unfortunately, the best is T-Mobile and Sprint. Both T-Mobile and Sprint have plans you don't even have to pay extra for to allow unlimited international texting in most countries, 20-cent phone calls, and free slow data. Sprint's the best of these. It has something called One World that gives you a gigabyte of high-speed data in the first month. For 13 days, that might be plenty. And then it continues to give you free data, but at a slower rate. T-Mobile starts at the slower rate and stays at the slower rate. But they're on Verizon, and if she calls Verizon, Verizon will say, yeah, that's $100 for 250 megabytes or something. That's outrageous. I can't remember what the cost was. But it's no, $25 for it's ridiculous for 100 megabytes, something like that. It costs so much that I wouldn't recommend it.
Could she possibly swap out her SIM card? Because I've heard people say that Verizon, you can still take the SIM cards out of Verizon phones and use them internationally.
You can. Verizon lost, had to make it a consent decree. They lost a battle with the FCC. And the FCC said, here is your punishment, Verizon. From now till the foreseeable future, I don't know how long this lasts, you have to make your unlock your SIM slots. People should be able to put in any SIM card. So if you buy a phone that has an LTE slot, a SIM card slot in a Verizon phone, not all Verizon phones do, but your iPhone does, the new Galaxy S7 does, you could put any other company's card in there and it'll work. The negative, and this is one good solution. She's only there 13 days. It may not be the best solution. The negative of that is her Verizon number stops working. She now has a French number.
Yeah.
And she's paying French data rates. And if she calls the U.S., she's calling it from a French number. It's going to be expensive. So.
You use, like, FaceTime audio for
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Well, the good news is Wi-Fi is ubiquitous.
Yeah.
So wherever she is, at the hotel, at the restaurant, at the cafe, she should use a Wi-Fi because it's very inexpensive. And make Skype calls or FaceTime calls or Facebook calls. Absolutely, that won't cost anything. Part two right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So, I love this. I go to the Verizon website because I'd like to see what does it cost to get an affordable plan? And I click the link. Oh, actually, maybe. Where is the pricing? Here it is. Travel pass. Oh, maybe this is it. All right. Yeah, $25 per month, and you get 100 megabytes. Megabytes! That's nothing. That's a day. Can't you buy a package? Oh, here it is. Need more data? Yes. For $35 a month more, you can add 250 megabytes. No, $50 a device. It's ridiculous. Basically, it's ridiculous. Verizon's the worst. So, what do you do? You don't do Verizon. And you must turn off international data roaming, be sure. My pencil is low. Yeah. That's so outrageous, especially since T-Mobile and Sprint both give you free unlimited data. I don't know how Verizon gets away with this, but people, because they got spokesmen saying it's the best. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Noah's traveling, and he wants to know about, well, actually, it's not you, right? It's your friends.
It's my sister.
Your sister. So, yeah, it's too bad she's on Verizon. As I said, the worst. Were she on Sprint or T-Mobile, this wouldn't be an issue at all.
We switched to T-Mobile, but their service, we were like excited because of that plan, but then the service at our house was terrible, so we went calling back.
Yeah, you kind of have to go with whatever gives you the best connection where you are.
Of course.
So what you can do, and this would be a better choice, it's what I was talking about with Dorothy. She's coming from France to the U.S., but it's the same thing. When you get to France, rent a MiFi device that is a portable wireless access point that gets its data connection from 4G or LTE on a French network, Orange, or something like that, and then will be an access point that you, your sister can join via her phone, her laptop, her tablet. As I said, she's going to have Wi-Fi. I mean, really, that's the, you know, that's the nice thing. And in Google Maps, for instance, lets you say, I want, can you keep the Paris maps online even if I'm offline? You know, can you make sure they're available? And it'll download them. But it's still nice to have. Just remember, she should turn off data roaming, because that's the thing that'll cost her a bunch of money. So before you leave, I do it on the plane. You know, I go into airplane mode, and then before I even turn it back on, I turn off international data roaming, and I don't touch it unless it's an emergency until I get home, because that'll cost you.
But she needs to have a valid phone number, because she needs to be able to, like, text other people.
Yeah, so that's why the MiFi is a good solution. Her phone stays as is. Data roaming is turned off, but she joins the access point via Wi-Fi, so she, in effect, has Wi-Fi everywhere she goes.
Okay. And
that's the best way to do it. If you want to find out more about options in France, I've mentioned this before, Prepaid with Data is a wiki that people contribute to with that information. Prepaid with Data. Just Google Prepaid with Data. You'll find it.
And one other quick thing. Since she's going to be on a plane for a long time, is there any way that she can rip DVDs to put on her MacBook?
Oh, yeah. That's easy. So she needs a DVD ripper. My recommendation is Handbrake. It's free from handbrake.fr. It, when she installs it, it'll say, well, hey, I can't crack that code, that, you know, the copy protection code on the DVD, but you know what can? VLC. Download that. So she'll download VLC, which is actually a great DVD player, too. And it explains how to do that at the Handbrake website. So the VLC is a video player, so she puts the DVD in, VLC opens it up. And when it does that, by the way, it gets the decryption key into memory. Then she can close VLC or open Handbrake, close VLC, and Handbrake will say, oh, I see you have the decryption code. Let me rip that DVD. She can copy it. It's about a gigabyte a movie. So if she's got 20 free gigs, she can get 20 movies on there. And by the way, technically illegal, but no law, no judge in the land is going to do anything about it as long as you own those DVDs. You're making a copy of a DVD you own. Don't do that for DVDs you rent or borrow. But if you own the DVD, while it's technically illegal, I can't imagine that anybody would hold that against you. You bought the DVD already. You just want to make it easier to carry on the airplane.
And that'll work with, like, an external CD player or DVD player? Because her MacBook doesn't have a CD DVD drive.
Does it connect via USB to her computer?
Yes.
Yes.
Awesome.
Thanks for the call. Moving on to Bill in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Hello, Bill.
Good afternoon, Leo. I'm a longtime fan, and I appreciate your recommendations of Carbonite, Epson, and Texture.
All sponsors of this fine program.
Leo, I just came back from my boat, and both of my house batteries were down at 10.5 volts. I have a beautiful display in my cockpit there that has LEDs that shows voltage.
Oops. I accidentally hit a button. Gosh, do you remember, Kim, what he wanted to know? No. I'm sorry. My apologies.
He's still on. San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Well, what did I do then?
I don't know, but line four is still showing up.
I don't know. Something's wrong. I have engineers crawling all over here, and I've somehow screwed this up. Should I try again? Hey, there he is. Okay.
Leo.
Yes, let's start over. Let's just rewind the tape.
Okay, Leo.
Okay. Hey, it's Bill on the line from San Juan. Beautiful. I love San Juan. Beautiful.
Oh, thank you, Leo. It's a beautiful day down here today.
I bet it is.
I just got back from my boat, and two of my house batteries were down at 10.5 volts. I have a beautiful display in the cockpit with three LEDs that shows the voltage and three LEDs that shows amperage. I also have an iPhone 5, and the Wi-Fi has the marina has Wi-Fi, but very, very weak. I would love to be able to set the iPhone up there so it would take a picture of my instruments let's say once an hour, and email it to me or text message it to me. Any ideas?
Okay. I got a little confused by the 10 volts and all that stuff.
Well, my house battery.
That's irrelevant. That's not important.
Yeah.
The detail confused me. I'm also distracted. So you have a camera on the boat?
No, I don't. But I do have an old iPhone.
I see. You want to use the iPhone as a camera that you can check in with periodically.
That's correct.
I got it now.
Sends me an email or sends me a text message.
Hmm. There's got to be an app for that, right? It says so on the ad. Let me think. Does the iPhone itself have internet connectivity? Do you have Wi-Fi on the boat? Yeah.
I have AT&T, so that's no problem. The Wi-Fi is real bad.
All right. So you're going to keep... I mean, the reason that it's puzzling is this is an expensive way to do it when you could just buy a dedicated camera for less. But you got the iPhone. It's on AT&T. You're willing to pay the Network Connect charges for AT&T. What you need is a time lapse. Do you want to be able to trigger the picture, or do you want it just to send one periodically?
Just send one periodically.
Yeah. So you need a camera app. It's a little tricky because the iPhone has to stay on, doesn't it?
I can plug it in, keep it charged.
Yeah, but it's going to want to sleep, I would guess. So you need an app that will keep the phone on in camera mode and will every, whatever, minute or two, snap a picture and email it to you.
Yeah, so once an hour is fine.
Once an hour. All right, this is one for the chat room because I'm sure there's an app that will do that. Somebody in the chat room, let me just look at some of the suggestions that are starting to come across. Is it iCamera? Most of these things are, I think, look at this. Here's a home security webcam application. There actually seems like there are a few of these. Presence-free smart home motion detector. This is called Many Thing Home Security Webcam with Motion Detector Alerts and Remote Presence. It is free on iTunes. Many Things converts, this looks like exactly what you want, your spare iOS device into a sophisticated video monitoring camera in seconds with live streaming, motion alerts, and cloud recording. It's the easy way. No need to buy a camera. Well, this looks like exactly what you want. So it's, wow. Thank you, chat room. Many Thing. It's not the best English. That worries me a little bit. Many Thing Home Security Webcam. It's on the App Store. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Motion alerts. Remote control. Wow. And so it's free, but you pay for the kind of the subscription for the... Turn your old iOS device into a home monitoring camera. Well, I'll be diggity danged. iPhone or iPad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Wow. Last week, because of the time change, I thought we had another hour to go. This is, check the clock. Would you, Kim? This is the last 15 minutes
of
the show.
It is really the last segment.
Because I can do another hour.
You can do whatever you want.
Nobody will hear it. Yeah, right.
Like, we'll do it for the other audience.
For posterity. How about Ernie in San Diego? Hi, Ernie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How you doing, Leo?
Hey, I'm great.
You provide an excellent service, so I hope you can help me.
I hope so, too.
Anyway, my daughter has a Dell Esperon laptop, and she's running Windows 8.1 on it.
Okay.
And when she turns it on, the light on the DVD drive lights up. But when she goes to My PC and looks for the drive, it doesn't list it. Now, I've gone to several YouTube sites on how to fix that problem, and none of them work. I went to Microsoft support page with an automatic fix-it program that they have, and that didn't work. So I went to a computer store, and they gave me an ISO 8.1 ISO disk, and he said that if the BIOS reads it, but it doesn't show up, then that might be a thing. So I put the disk in, and it read it.
Wait a minute, where'd you put the disk? In the DVD drive?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, so it is working.
Now it recognized that disc, but it only lasted for a couple of seconds, and it just disappeared off my PC.
So it's a laptop or a desktop?
Laptop.
So it could just be that the cable, I would guess this, you can maybe want to open it up and look. It sounds like the cable is loose.
Now, I took the DVD drive out. It's just one screw, and you just pull it out. And I put it back in, and it recognized the disc again, but it went away after a couple of seconds.
Could be the drive. So it's a hardware fault. So it's just a question of what hardware is messed up. So it's not a cable, and the drive goes directly into some sort of connector on the motherboard. It sounds like if you slide it in and it just you goes chunk and it's in there. So the drive probably is a part that can be replaced if you're able to remove it that easily. So it might be the drive is bad. It could be more problematic if it's something on the motherboard is bad. I don't think it's a software issue. I don't think it's a Windows problem. It sounds like a hardware problem. How old is this Inspiron?
I'm not sure. It's my daughter's computer. I'm thinking 2 years, maybe.
It sounds like something's wrong with the DVD player, the physical drive itself. They're not very expensive. The part itself shouldn't be. You have to get it from Dell, or you could probably go on eBay. There'll be somebody with an old Inspiron that's selling it, or the part itself. But I'd start with Dell, get a new one. I think replacing that might be, and that's $30 or $40. That's not going to be super expensive.
Is there any way I could test?
Well, that's the problem. I mean, of course, you'd want to kind of narrow it down before you spend any money, but I don't know how you would test it unless you have another friend with an exact identical Inspiron that you could borrow their drive and see.
Now, I have an Inspiron on my computer, but it's not the same.
Yeah, it really would have to be for that model because just the way it fits and everything, it probably would have to be for that model. That would be my guess. So when you... you can go into the software to go into the BIOS and see if you can physically see it. The light going on doesn't necessarily mean much. What I'd like to know is if the computer can see it. It sounds like when you put a disc in there, the computer could see it, but then briefly, but then it just disappeared.
Right. And it doesn't always see it. ISO in it saw it, and when I took the drive out and put it back in, it saw it, but it only lasted for a few seconds.
You know, I'm only guessing. My best guess, though, after years of experience, there is a Dell Diagnostic quick test you can run. You might want to try downloading that.
What's the website for that?
It's from Dell.com support. So if you could Google Dell PC Diagnostic quick test. And frankly, Dell would tell you if you called them. They'd say, download this and run it. Tell us what you see. And see if the drive's working. Alternately, you can always get a USB DVD player. They're not expensive. They connect to the USB port and would have all the same functionality as the internal one. It's just a little bit of a pain.
The only problem with that, the reason we even found the problem was I was going to load Microsoft Office into a computer, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
And I don't
see, that's why, by the way, if you got a new computer, no DVD drive. Nobody, because everybody downloads it. You can download Microsoft Office and install it. It'd be a lot easier than trying to do it on a DVD. So that's why it sounds like it's not something, she's not watching movies or anything. She just needs it occasionally.
Right.
Oh.
For schoolwork.
Yeah. Well, that old version of Office, I guess you could install it with an external drive, or download Microsoft Office and use the Office key you have. I think you don't really need the drive. A USB DVD player is $15. That's probably the simplest solution if you're really insisting on using that disc. It'd be one thing if she watches a lot of DVD movies, or you know, for some reason she was using DVDs a lot. If she doesn't use it, I think it's probably not worth spending a lot of energy trying to fix it, or certainly not a lot of money trying to fix it. You can install Office easily enough from a download. And that's what everybody does now. I haven't bought a computer with a DVD in years. They just don't make them anymore. It's very rare. Do you want me to do an ad before I take Vic from Yorba Linda there, Nathan? Am I all caught up here? Can't tell. Don't know. Vic, Yorba Linda, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Vic.
Hi, Leo.
What's up?
Well, I have Verizon as my wireless carrier when I'm on the road.
Yeah.
And I have two of their MiFi hotspots. The reason I have two of them is 2 years ago I started experiencing problems when I was in a client's home doing their tax returns or at their business doing tax returns. I travel basically Southern California, and up until 2 years ago, I didn't have a problem. 2 years ago, I started having a problem, so they said that probably the battery is getting weak in the MiFi, so they gave me another new MiFi, put it on my bill, and gave me $5 back credit, so I'm back to the same amount.
Yeah.
This tax season, I've been moving around, and I cannot get connected. Now, fortunately, I've been in a client's home or business where they have Wi-Fi, so I've been able to connect to the internet and do what I need to do. My question goes to, I know Verizon's had some problems recently with outages, but this has been a 2 year period of time. So is there somebody?
Is your phone a Verizon phone?
Yes.
And it gets connectivity?
Yes.
One thing you could do is use your phone as the hotspot. You'll have to pay Verizon $20 a month for that privilege. But the phone itself, what kind of phone is it?
It's a Android Maxi.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, unless it's really old, it will have in the settings hotspot, where you create, just like you do with your MiFi, but you do it with your phone. If your phone's getting connectivity, then the connectivity is good wherever you are. I don't know why the MiFi is not working. Maybe you got another bad one. But the phone's getting its data from the same exact place the MiFi is.
Okay, so I haven't had any problems calling out with the
phone. No, not phone calls, data. So launch your browser. In fact, best thing to do a speed test on it and see what the connectivity. You can actually see on the phone if it says LTE in little letters on there, then you're getting LTE. If it's a really, I'm not sure how old that phone is. If it's really old, it might not even do the high-speed stuff. Maybe get a new phone instead of getting a MiFi. But the connectivity, the data connectivity is separate from the voice connectivity. So the phone makes a good, most of the time nowadays, people use their phone as a hotspot. It's maybe not as fast. There's another alternative. If Sprint is better in your area, I use a Karma Go. I love the Karma. It's a MiFi. But it's a pay-as-you-go MiFi. Actually, they now have a subscription service. Don't do that. Pay-as-you-go means you only pay when you need data, which is nice. If you buy just a onesie, twosies, it's $15 a gigabyte. If you buy a package, it's $10 a gigabyte. And it doesn't ever expire. So you don't need to use it if you don't have to use. If you can get Wi-Fi, use that. Karma Go. I think it's GetKarma, KARMA.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time.